Welcome. Welcome to Recipe for Peace Now. I'm your host, Sue Beller, and this is the show where we find practical, real-life solutions to difficulties bringing people together for a common goal, a common good. We will discuss listener emails, answer common questions, and at the end of the show, we will have two delicious potluck recipes made for sharing with your new community of, well, if not exactly friends, at least willing participants. If you would like to send in a question or a favorite recipe, please email us at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com or visit our website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Also, if you'd like to hear prior shows, they're archived on that website, recipeforpeacenow.com. Thanks. Now let's get started. This time we're going to be talking about the what ifs. What if we change something? What if we did it like this? What if we did it like that, right? The what ifs. And it is an important thought because we want to know that we've considered all the angles before we actually take action, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So why is determining what if so important? Right? Yes. This is true. So that we can analyze the options outside of the box. Yes, so that we can really think it through. Let's think through the what ifs, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, good point. I'm going to make this a separate talking point, even though it has to do with thinking through the options. And that's to prevent unintended consequences, right? Yes. But a lot of folks are talking about unintended consequences because we didn't do the what ifs. What if we did this? What if this happened, right? Yeah. This is a really good point, too, that quite a few people are talking about, that you would need to, if you have the what ifs, which you always do, right, we might need to call in an expert. It might be time. We might need to ask a third-party impartial, what if we did it like this? What would happen? What would be the consequence? What, in your expert opinion, would be a better option, right? That's what you have experts for, to find out what they think would be a good idea. Mm-hmm. Yes, let's talk about our invisible participants, those people who don't want to be really upfront, but they have a true opinion, and they can tell us a what-if that'll occur, and therefore we would like to hear it, right? Mm-hmm. Yes, we do. We'd like to have to look at everything so we have a reputation for lasting results. Because the question is, why is determining what if is important? And one of the reasons it's important is because we need a reputation that we really get something done that's practical, that's useful, that's really, oh, yeah, that worked. That's really spot on, right? Mm-hmm. We're going to enforce the civility rules, yes, so that everybody gets heard and all the what-ifs get considered, right? Because sometimes there's quite a few of them. What if we didn't act, maybe, right? Yeah, sometimes that's an option, too. So let's hear all the what-ifs using our civility rules, right? And the what-ifs need some empathy. Right? Yeah. We need some empathy for pretty much everyone. And remember, of course, because we're going to talk about this, but remember it, that empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Empathy is understanding, not necessarily agreement. Right? Right. Mm-hmm. So, let's start talking about this. Let's talk about thinking outside the box. Speaking of which, I'm going to leave you for a second. I'm going to actually take a sip of water and think about my allergies so that I don't lose my voice. Hang on 1 minute. I know, it's a sign it's a live show because I'm kind of wandering off for a second. Don't leave. I'm coming right back. Here I am. Yeah, there's no pause button. It's kind of like, oh, hello. We're going to push the pause button for a second. Thank you. Yes, thank you. I feel like I'm going to lose my voice like I sometimes do during the show. And I just took a sip of water and an antihistamine because that'll work out better for all of us. Mm-hmm. Yes. Mm-hmm. I was thinking, so what if? Let's think about our options and analyze, thinking outside the box, as Muhammad and others are saying. Let's think outside the box. Now, that's kind of an Americanism, and this is, of course, a global show, but it means let's think about things that haven't been done. Let's think about reactions of different parties. Let's ask them. Because how can you know? I sit on a lot of committees where people talk about other people's reactions. It's kind of, well, all right, I confess this. You can look at my picture and see that I'm not so young. And I sit on committees where people want to know how to attract young people, right? Some of you know I'm a Rotarian, for example. And Rotary is a 100-year-old organization. It's a service organization. And we do service above self. We do good things in the world. But like a lot of organizations that have been around for a while, we're having some questions about how to attract younger members. And the idea is, what should we do? How should we be flexible, right? Flexibility is important. And show younger people that they would like to be Rotarians, that it's a really good thing. And it is. And my particularly Rotary Club is attracting lots of nice young members. But it is still substantially people who have already become established in business and are not so in their 20s and 30s, right? Yeah. And we want to, of course, perpetuate the organization, and we want people to have an outlet to do good things. Yes, yes. And they sit there and people 50 and up talk about what people who are in their 30s would like us to do. Well, how do you know that? Let's think outside the box. And let's do something outrageous. Let's ask them, right? Yeah. Let's get a focus group together. Let's ask people in that millennial type age range what it is that they like about Rotary, what would attract them, what would cause them to be more involved, right? Yes. This is true. I see a lot of you are Rotarians, just like me. Fabulous. It's, of course, an international organization. And the problem that we're having is, and this is why I said, well, go ask them, is that we have quite a few younger people in our club. It's a very big club. My particular one is I think, the second largest in the world. We have like 500 people. It's tremendous. And we have a very high percentage, statistically, of people who are under 40, I think it is, under 40, under 30, under a certain age. And one of the reasons is that people are indeed commenting on, as a suggestion, it's a good suggestion, is that if you are younger, we give you a break on the price. It's cheaper. It's not very expensive to be a Rotarian. Ordinarily, it is kind of expensive. And the problem is, and why we would have a group to ask, but you have to think outside the box, is that when it becomes the full price, when you reach that awkward birthday age where it becomes twice as expensive because we've been subsidizing it before, people quit. They don't view it as being important enough to give the extra funds, and it is not because they don't have the extra funds and they aren't fully employed and like that, because there is provision for that if you are truly unable to pay. That's not a, you know what I mean. But it's not because they are unable to pay. It is because, well, that's what we should ask them, right? Yeah. And so that's the idea, to think outside of the box and maybe to bring in different ideas, different concepts, different ways of viewing whatever the issues are, right? And sometimes it's surprising. It's something that we could do, but we didn't realize it, for example. Yeah. So to think outside the box. Yes. And people are asking what we did. The answer is we did indeed, because I kind of insisted. And it's sensible, right, to go ask the people we're trying to keep. And so what we did was we said, why are you thinking of quitting? What's the matter with us? What would you like to see it done better? And the answer was communicate more online and pay online and like that. They didn't like having to, well, we were sending out paper billing because we had always done it that way. And there was no Facebook page and like that. And they wanted to have more connectedness in a way that they connected. And I think that's perfectly reasonable. Yes, now we not only have a website, but our own club has a website, but we actually videotape, if that's still a word, we record. But you understand what videotape means, right? A visual and audio. We actually professionally record it. One of our members volunteered professional equipment and professional young people. And every week, we meet every week, and it is on the website so that you can look at it if you've missed one and you'd like to hear the speaker. Yeah. See, things like that. We didn't know that was an important thing to do, but it was. And it was, and it's a much better club because of it, because we thought outside the box, and we, for heaven's sakes, asked the people we're talking about their opinion. So don't just, it's the weirdest thing. Participants, they're just the people in the room talk about something that affects other people. Well, let's have the other people be in the room too. Let's go fetch them. Let's go see what it is that they think also, and then we'll know something, and we'll have some options, right? Yeah. Uh-huh. Yes, also, this is a very good point that Erin and others are making, that you should also research all prior efforts in similar circumstances, because it tells you what's happening in the world. It tells you what didn't work, and we're going to talk about experts in a little while on this show. But one of my favorite kinds of experts is someone who worked on similar issues and it didn't quite work out. We'd like to know why. And a lot of times these people are really still interested in having something really be good, really be a good idea. They're really still interested. They just didn't quite work out on their end, but they can tell us what happened and what options they would have liked, for example. And that's terribly interesting. They're the best experts because they've tried it. Mm-hmm. Yes, in the same regard, people who have actually made it in similar circumstances are fabulous experts and consultants and like that, and we'd really like to talk to them because we'd like to follow in their footsteps and know what they're doing, right? Right. Mm-hmm. Yes, as a corollary to that, it's a very good point that Margaret and others are making, that you should also invite in the opposition. Yes, invite in the opposition. Let's not just go, oh, well, you're against us. No, let's get together. Sometimes we are not as far apart as everyone thinks. And it's fabulous. There's something to say, something to negotiate, some sort of an opinion to be had. And it's an option. It's a what if. What if we listened to everybody with courtesy? We're going to talk about civility. And really thought about the validity of other opinions. The validity of what others are doing, right? Yeah. And how it impacts us. Mm-hmm. Yes. And some of you have seen me do this. Okay. More so in class, because a lot of you have seen a workshop or a seminar. Will you role play? You actually take a position that's not your position, and you argue it. You role play it. You show what's good about it, and you insist, and you take that side in negotiation, right? Yeah. Oh, excuse me. Doing this will give you an appreciation for other people's opinions, other options. Yes. It has to be done carefully. Okay, in a classroom situation, we do it a lot. In real life, it has to be done carefully to be certain that it remains civil all the way around. Right? Yeah. And because in classroom, it's just a theory. It's an exercise. It's not personal anyway. But in real life, sometimes emotions get the better of people, and they take offense. So you have to be careful about doing it, so careful that we can maintain civility, right? Or maybe the role-playing is of somebody who refuses to participate with us, and they're not there. It makes a difference, too. Mm-hmm. So we've gotten quite a bit of opinions. We've thought about the various options. And what the main thing we want to avoid is unintended consequences. Yes, thank you. Mm-hmm. Unintended consequences, yes. Hussein says you need to analyze all of the consequences and all of the options. So true. The trick is to know when you have. The trick is to know when you've done that, when you've analyzed all the options and really looked at all the unintended consequences. Let's make sure that we don't skip over any, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. This is true, too. Sometimes you put a plan in place and you think that you have looked at all the options. You think you have done the what ifs. You've been pretty careful and diligent and spent quite a bit of time with all kinds of different opinions and all kinds of different groups and like that, and you pretty much covered it. Mm-hmm. The trick is, now that we've implemented, to not just walk off, but to keep track of the results when they're put in place. Mm-hmm. Because you also need a plan for modification, for flexibility. In case whatever is that happens, the unintended consequence, it's not exactly one that you thought about. That happens, right? Sometimes it's a new unintended consequence. It wasn't something that happened before, for example. And you go, that wasn't so. Mm-hmm. Well, we're going to work on that, you see. And it's not a sin, but you do want to be able to be flexible. Mm-hmm. Because this is real life, right? And you may need to get together again and make a modification. I see this quite a bit when the law is being changed, the rules are being modified in some way. Some sort of regulations have been modified. And you go, this is good, this is what we want. But then some sort of a problem's a big word. Some sort of a group, for example, pops up who has had an unintended consequence. They did not know to contact you, and you did not know to contact them ahead of time before you implemented. And you go, and we did ask the experts, and nobody mentioned you. Yeah. So what are we going to do about it? We need to be flexible because this is real life. We might need to go to court and have an interpretation of the rules or the law that is in accordance with what we had in mind, right? But does not adversely impact somebody through unintended consequences, right? Yeah. So real life, because that's what we're dealing with, the trick is that we want to have a conclusion. We want to have an outcome that is workable, that can really be done, that will really last, that will really have lasting change, and not just be kind of an exercise in theory. I like theory as well as the next person, but it doesn't really help much. We need to get action. We need to have something happen so that we can go forward, right? Yes. Mm-hmm. Our next topic is, what if we need an expert? Because that goes with unintended consequences. In order to prevent the unintended consequences, let's see if we need to call in an expert. We've exhausted the expertise of our participants, right? We've exhausted the expertise of our employer. Remember that in this show, we use the word employer as a generic. The employer is whoever it is, a person, an organization, a board, whoever it is that had the brains to bring us in as leader. We're going to call the employer. It does not imply an actual employment agreement, right? They brought us in, we're going to call them the employer. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, it's sometimes there's a more formal arrangement, and sometimes there's a less formal arrangement. I do a lot of business work, and so I usually have a written contract, which that's pretty formal, right? Yeah. And the employer, whoever that is, and whatever terms we've got, they're not necessarily actually my employer legally, but they are in agreement with the contract terms. They've signed. Yeah. Mm-hmm. So what if we need an expert? We've exhausted what we've got. I think that the answer to what if you need an expert should be, yes, you do, almost always, right? Because I want somebody to look it over and see what's going to be the unintended consequences, right? The trick is to know when and whom to contact, when and who, right? Yeah, because you want to take the proper person so that you've done due diligence. And when somebody asks you, say, well, we did ask these experts, and it was their opinion that, fill in the blank, that it was within the confines of the law, perhaps, right? Yeah. A lot of times we're working to make some sort of a regulatory-type change, and that does have consequences to lots of people. And there's not necessarily always so much notification that we're working to make this change, so not everybody knows. But experts in the field should have a good idea of what is reasonable, should have a good idea of what is workable, right? Yeah. A good idea of how flexible we're going to need to be. Yes. All of this is, this is all a good idea. And it's important to recognize that it is something that we need to plan for, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. When to contact before we implement. When we finished all of our own research, all of our own information, all of our own due diligence, let's try asking somebody outside. A lot of times we're doing, a change of a law. I was pinned to that. And we've looked at it a really long time, the participants and the employer and like that, and interested parties who we know about. And we've argued the wording, and we've been flexible, and we've got it, right? I like to have somebody who has not been in the process look at that and tell me what it means, the law that we've just written, the rule, because they see it with new eyes. They see it as an outsider, and that's a really important thing to know. What do you think this means? Because if it's not what we think it means, we've got a wee bit of a difference there now, don't we? Yeah, what do you think it means? That's an important question, People asking how you determine who's an expert. Personally speaking, I like people with experience, personal experience, who have been in the field and have done it. And I don't particularly care about their credentials so much. Oh, credentials are nice. I mean, I have a lot of credentials, but I like experience the best, especially on certain kinds of issues. Yes, well, there's a real practical application. But for the employer and for the media, because remember that the media makes public opinion. They do. You can argue it if you'd like, but they really do. The media, especially nowadays with so much media and so many agendas, so many theories, the media makes public opinion. And it is important that they accept your expert. And that means that they'd like to see credentials. They're impressed, right? Now, I must confess, and sometimes I think that I include myself in this statement, sometimes the dumbest people I know have the best credentials because they've never done it in the field, and they have really crazed ideas about human nature and what will work. We can deal with that. But they look good on paper. And they're well-spoken, a lot of them, right? And they're impressive because they look good on paper. And you can tell them what to say, and they have understanding, right? And they make an excellent media spokesperson. We're going to talk about the media a little further in, but remember that we actually need a spokesperson to speak with the media, right? Yes. A lot of times your participants are experts. Yeah, but they've kind of got a side. They've got an agenda. Or they wouldn't be participating, right? Yeah. And so they actually, although their opinions are very important, you might want to temper it with somebody with a different opinion. I personally like competing experts. I do. I like them to really not – I like more than one and have them not agree with each other, and I want to know why. What's your reasoning? Why? Right? Always ask why. And I think that's interesting because it means that we've covered all sides. And sometimes you find an inherent bias, and you didn't realize it. You really didn't. Excuse me for one second. I'm going to blow my nose. Goodness gracious, this really is a live show. Yes. No, thank you. People are asking if I'm coming down with a cold. I don't think so. It's just kind of allergy season around here and all kinds of stuff is floating. You can actually see the air. It's kind of exciting. So all sides. So that you can figure out if there's an inherent bias before you take action. And what to do about it, right? Yeah. And how to be flexible in case that impacts. Because it might. Now we're going to talk about the next kind of expert, right? There's a third kind of expert besides the kind you bring in or you research or have experience with it or kind of credentials for it. And that's our invisible ones. The Recipe for Peace now, we call these people invisible participants. They are the people who have an important opinion. We would like to hear it because they understand an unintended consequence that we would like to know about before we actually take action. But they don't want to come forward. They want to remain anonymous, right? We really would like their opinions. We'd really like their expertise. I have some experts who I call upon. I suppose they might be called mentors also. But they don't want to be on a real day-to-day basis bothered with the thing, right? Sometimes. But they do want it to come out Right. They have an opinion that they'd like to put in. They have a viewpoint. They have a what if. What if we do this? Well, the answer is you haven't considered that. Mm-hmm. Yes. So it's very important to welcome in your anonymous participants and to keep them anonymous. Right? Yes. People have to be able to have confidence in you that you won't just tell. Right? If they wanted to just tell, they would be not be invisible participants. They would be right down there talking to everybody. Mm-hmm. So people are asking why. Why what? It's important to have a reputation. Why is it important to have a reputation for honesty and confidence? Because otherwise nobody ever talks to you again. And that's really the truth. I know people like that, and I wouldn't tell them anything, and no one else will either, because everything, they don't know the concept of inconfidence, right? Sometimes the question is being also asked why people would want to remain anonymous and why would they be good opinions, because obviously they're criminals. No, they are not usually criminals. I say usually because we're flexible people, but they are not flexible. We would not commit a criminal act. We're flexible in whose opinion we have heard. Because sometimes even people who have not such fabulous reputations for honesty and confidence, sometimes they do have a valid point that needs to be considered, right? Yeah. But you see this, I'm going on someone's reputation for honesty and confidence, and I don't respect them. And that's why you need to have an excellent reputation for honesty and confidence. So that people always respect you, don't try to lie to you, and really want to assist. Now, the question is being asked why people would want to remain anonymous. The answer is usually because they have some sort of a position of power, some sort of an employment, where it would not be good to take sides, especially maybe our side. But they do think that we're right and that change should occur. Right? But they don't want to have their name on it just in case it doesn't work out. Yeah, they want to keep their job, right? Just in case it doesn't work out, they don't want to put their name to it. They want to tell us something important, but they don't necessarily want to come forward with it. Mm-hmm. It's very important, yes. It's very important to everyone understands that you will keep a confidence. Yes, you will. Your reputation in the community will be excellent. And if you just tell, not so much. Mm-hmm. I get this question occasionally, and I'm going to say I don't know. The question is being asked, what if our invisible participant divulges something criminal, divulges something morally reprehensible that's going on that will cause an unintended consequence? I'm kind of a moralist, and if it's really illegal or truly reprehensible in some way, skirts me being, usually that's illegal, I think without naming a source, I would be someone's invisible participant, like law enforcement, to tell them where to look, right? But without naming the source, I would not divulge who told me. But I've never had it happen. But I have thought about it. And I think I would work it out so that I was an invisible participant in seeing something rectified, right? Yeah. I'm pretty darn sure that's what I would do. In fact, I'm positive. But you never know until you do it. But yes, That would be my take on it. I would say, you know, this is going on. I don't know. I can't tell you how I know it, but yeah. Yes, I would go for that. I dreamt it. But I'm okay. I've got a lot of connections, a lot of people who know me. And if I told them something, they would look into it without having to really burn somebody who told me something in confidence. It's tricky, though. And so you have to be very careful and think through how it should be handled so that you don't ruin somebody who is nice enough to be your invisible participant, but so the justice is done, right? Yes. People are talking about layers of criminality. The worse the thing, the more I would be an anonymous informant, right? Yeah. But without forcing my anonymous informant to come forward. Does that make sense? Yeah. Because then it wouldn't ruin my reputation, but then it also wouldn't ruin my soul. Because I don't do illegal things, and especially immoral things, even if they are not technically illegal. I'm kind of a funny like that. Mm-hmm. So, next topic is, we talked about invisible participants. It's important, it's really important to have a reputation for honesty also. Honesty and confidence. And acquiescing to something really bad would, in my opinion, be against your reputation for honesty. Sometimes I will actually tell people before they tell me something that I will not divulge who they are, but I am a person of great moral honesty and confidence and like that. And they can decide, but we all understand that if you've told me something that is wrong, I will try to fix it. And I have had that circumstance several times in my career, where it's not someone being an expert, it's not someone telling me something and asking in confidence and asking to remain anonymous as an unintended consequence that we're about to hit. But I have had, because of my reputation for honesty, I have had people come to me and tell me in secret, really, anonymously, that something bad is going on because they know that I will come forward with it, that I will do something about it, that I will rectify the situation because, yeah, it's, all right, I'll give the example of when this happened without naming any names or anything because, of course, it has to do with my reputation for confidentiality. It had to do with labor practices because I do business. It had to do with labor practices and like that, and I did indeed report it without reporting the name of the person who told me. I was the named person. Does that make sense? Instead of the person who told it to me, I took it upon myself to be the named person who was the informant who actually got help for people and got it to be fixed and got the situation under control. Yes, I did. The question is being asked, did I lose the client? Yes, I did lose a client. But quite frankly, if I don't deal with the reason I don't do criminal law, and I do not, I've never done criminal or family law, come to think of it, but I've never done criminal law. I've always been, basically speaking, a tax and business attorney. The reason I don't do criminal law is that I don't like criminals. It's moralistic. I know this. I know that's judgmental, but I know it about myself. And you should know things about yourself and how you want to conduct your life. I do not wish to defend criminals. It's just me. And I respect that some people do, and they're very good at it. And I think everybody should have their day in court, and I think that all laws should be followed by the authorities and everybody else. I do. But I do not want to find the loophole to let a criminal go free. I don't like criminals. I don't like dealing with criminal law. Therefore, and that is my bias, that, and I know it about myself, therefore, I do not like clients who I deem to be criminals. Hey, that's now attorney-client privilege. I will, if you tell me something that you've done illegally, I will can't turn you in, attorney-client privilege. I can fire you as a client, and I can have somebody whisper in my ear something that I should tell somebody, because that's not attorney-client privilege, right? Yeah. No. Don't be, and everyone knows this. My clients know this. My clients know that if they're going to skirt the law, I'm not the right person to do it with. Even if it's technically legal, makes me nervous. Makes me uncomfortable, and I won't do it. Yeah, I'm just not the right person for it. And I feel that way about tax schemes and all kinds of stuff. No. If you have to go to a tax shelter country and like that, I'm not the right person for it. I'm really not. And clients know this, yes. And you should make that clear, too. You should make the what if you wanted to do this. What if the client says to you, what if I wanted to do this? And you say, you should come be right up front and say, no, I am not the right. If you go that route, I am not the right attorney for this. I am not the right mediator for this. I am not the right person for this. Find somebody else, because I will not do it. I can't do it. Yeah. And, yeah, I'm real upfront about it. Yeah, I know some of you are first kind of starting out in the profession and like that, but you need a reputation for honesty and integrity. You just do. And if you dance with that kind of stuff, I suppose there's money in it. Maybe I shouldn't say, but I really, 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 really think you shouldn't. Yeah, that's all I have to say about it. And that's my bias, and I know this. And I understand that about myself, and I understand that it is not particularly popular. It is just my bias. Hey, we all got something we do. Okay. Our next topic, now that we've talked about the fact that we should all be honest and truthful, is that we should also try to get a workable outcome. I see a lot of groups, and this is why things take years. Years, people, years. I see a lot of groups that spend a lot of time theoretically doing the what ifs as theoreticals. What if this? There comes a point where you have to get down to a workable outcome. And you have to say, we've done the reasonable what ifs. And what if an alien from Mars comes and shoots you? It's too far away, too far fetched, depending on how you feel about it. Oh, never mind. But you don't understand what I'm telling you, that you've done the what-ifs that are really reasonable scenarios, and now we need to make a workable outcome. Yeah. You need to work together even if there's still bias, right? At the beginning of this show, I always say not exactly friends. You're not required to be friends. You're required to work together to make a workable outcome that you can do when the leader, which is us, has gone on to lead other things, right? Now, you might still be on retainer. You might still be called in if they hit a snag. But they need to be able to go forward together to make this, whatever the outcome is, real, to put it forth in real life. And not just be theory. I like theory as well as the next person. But, gee, we want to get somewhere. We want to do it. We want to We want to go forward. Yes. Mm-hmm. And they don't need us to do it, right? And one of the main things that needs to be done so that we can go forward, which is not always done, which is not always true, is that you need to define success. You need to know that you've got your outcome, for God's sake. Let's go forward, right? Yeah, and that seems obvious, but it is not. Sometimes I get called in to groups, kind of my specialty, if I have a specialty, is groups that have already, I don't like to use the word failed, but they've already failed. They've already not reached a workable outcome for one reason or another. They have, well, they failed, let's face it. Mm-hmm. And some of them, they're still a group, right? And they're supposed to reach a workable outcome, so I get called in as new sheriff in town. I actually call myself that, new sheriff in town, new rules. And the next thing we're going to talk about is civility rules, because that's the main thing that I enforce, because they're already mad at each other. They're already hostile. But a lot of times the reason why they failed was not because of the people in the room, kind of. Well, now it is because they've gotten hostile. But it was because they didn't know when they had success or what success looked like. You have to define that first so that you know what it is you're headed for, so that you know that this is what you want, right? Yeah. And it is imperative that we define success and imperative that we be flexible about it. Yes. Because circumstances, as we get into it, as we go forward, as we go into the real world, circumstances change. We all know this to be a true statement. Whatever it is that's happened now, this instant, maybe it'll stay constant and it's fabulous, but circumstances change lots, right? Yeah. So you need to be able to define success, and let's figure out who's going to define it. Right? The employer, remember it's a generic term, they probably define success. They tell you what they want. If your employer doesn't know what success looks like, that's before you come in. You need to help them to define that. Help them to understand that. Help them to understand that they need to define what success looks like and be flexible. If they cannot, run, because you've got no path. You've got nothing to work towards. What you've got is theory, and there will be no workable solution, and then they will be mad that there was nothing came of it. Run. First, we need to get the employer to understand what direction we're headed and to understand there's flexibility involved and to understand that they need some funding, too. We don't forget the money part. Right? Funding and time. It has been my experience that people who are relatively new, relatively inexperienced in the negotiation department, underestimate time and money. Personally speaking, I've got a real good idea about how long and how much for lots of things. I usually, to the employer, some of them know this because, of course, we've worked together many times, but I usually overestimate so that I can be a genius. We come in under time and under budget. But also, so if things happen and circumstances change, I'm not stuck. I don't have to stop and say, well, now we need more time and more money. And then somebody has to decide if that's good or not, right? Right. Mm-hmm. So it might be that the spokesperson, the media spokesperson, might be one of the people that define success, right? Sometimes there's been lots of media already, and that's public opinion. You can argue with me if you'd like that the media makes public opinion, but I'm telling you that they do. especially in this day and age where everything's media, where there's all kinds of interest groups and blogs and all kinds of things that people follow. Yeah, media makes public opinion. Public opinion oftentimes helps to define success because you've created an expectation, or you've created a situation that seems unfavorable and needs to be fixed, right? Because the media has deemed it bad in some way. Mm-hmm. Yes. You might have the participants decide what success looks like, depending on what kind of group it is, right? No matter what they do, no matter who's doing it, we must define success, understand it as flexible, but we must treat each other in a civil manner. Yes, I've worked my way to the civility rules, haven't I? For those of us who are new, and also those of us who just like hearing me say it, hello, how is everyone? Thank you all for being here. The civility rules are the only rules Recipe for Peace Now has, and they say at their core, we will not be rude to each other. We will not be rude to each other. Everybody will be treated with respect. Everybody will get their say. They'll get a turn to say what they think. Everybody will participate in the what ifs, right? So that we could really understand what if this happens, what if that happens, what if we took this tact, what if we worded it in this manner, right? Yeah. I announce the civility rules. Sometimes I really need to, because the group has become uncivil. And we're new day, new group, new leader, right? Right. Same group, new leader. I announce them even if I don't think I need to. And I've seen this group before, and they really are all of equal mind. They would not become uncivil, because you never know. Civility rules must be announced, and they must be enforced immediately, consistently, and fairly. By the time you have lost civility, it is too late to say, oh, you know those civility rules that I announced at the beginning? We're now going to enforce them. No! You must nip it in the bud. You must do it immediately. Mm-hmm. I require, and this is a very important point, that my employer, whoever brought me in, right, they're not necessarily my employer, that they make a commitment to back me up. Because otherwise, you can talk about the civility rules if you would like, but if nothing backs them up, then it's just smoke. Then it's just you don't have any teeth to them. So the employer needs to have someone help you enforce the civility rules. I like to know that there's a penalty for violation. There's sometimes, in fact, in the groups that I deal with, frequently the prior leader, the one who failed, is still in the group as a participant, right? And he or she would kind of prefer that we fail again, that I fail as leader. Because then they can say, well, it couldn't be done. Even Sue couldn't get it straightened out, right? Yeah, and so you've got someone with an agenda and maybe kind of a group that's kind of backing him or her with an agenda to not reach a successful outcome, not to define what we want, right? Mm-hmm. Sometimes, and I swear this is true, and you can feel it as you stand there as you get more experience, sometimes there was failure because it was deliberate. There was an agenda to not make it go, not be successful, not, right? Yeah, this is bad. the civility rules need to be effective in those same circumstances because you're going to have a bully. You're going to have someone who deliberately flaunts them. I like to have a real definite penalty for lack of civility, and because I do employment, I do corporate a lot, the penalty is usually money. It's usually employment. It's usually level of employment, right? If you don't want to participate fully, you will be thrown out of this group, but managers are in this group, and you can't be a manager anymore. You get demoted to stock clerk. Well, you know what I mean. But, yeah, there has to be real rules, and I like the employer to come physically and back me if necessary. I want to be able to call them in to see this egregious behavior and to, well, to play police officer, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yes. Sometimes I do like the ability, in fact, I rather demand it, but I do like the ability to reorganize the group and get rid of the people with the agenda who are prior not so good at it. But sometimes that can't be done. Sometimes they are high up, they are people on the board, they are whatever they are, but the same people need to make the decision that they couldn't reach before. Otherwise, of course, you would reorganize the group. You would ask people to leave, ask people to come. You would make it a more enthusiastic group, right? And remember that with civility, as with enthusiasm, we need to model it. You cannot ask people to do something that you do not do. You need to model civility. Yes. You cannot lose your temper. You cannot get rude. No. Yes, sometimes. All right. When you're kind of new or you've had a bad day, this is true. I haven't done it in years, but that's just me. Sometimes people lose, the leader loses civility for a second there. And oftentimes it's because somebody has deliberately goaded you, deliberately tried to cause you to crack. Right? Yeah. And if that happens, hopefully not bad enough so that you have to recuse yourself because that was their game, right? Remember not to give into their game. But if that happens and you need and you lose control, you lose civility for a second there, you must apologize and use yourself as an example of why we need civility, right? Yes. Use yourself as the example and use yourself as the model of we will now go forward with civility, right? Yeah. You can't just ignore it. You need to out it, so to speak, and then go forward, right? Right. My friends, thank you so much for being here. We are out of time. And that went fast, didn't it? We will do the recipes, hopefully next week. I know that we kind of linger on the recipes and we don't always get to them. But we've had such a lovely conversation. Thank you all for being here. Thank you for all of your participation. If you want to find us, we're at recipeforpeacenow@gmail.com. The website, www.recipeforpeacenow.com. Prior shows, they are archived on that website. Thank you for coming. Thank you for listening. Thank you for all of your participation. And please do come again. Thanks. Bye-bye.